You and I back together again Thursday, January 13th of 2022 on Connecticut Today. We chatted with former State Senate GOP leader Len Fasano about Connecticut's growing crime problem and the current political disconnect on the topic at the state capitol. Attorney Mike O'Neill joined us again from the Landmark Legal Foundation to weigh in on a U.S. Supreme Court vote regarding the Biden White House vaccine mandates, one of which was upheld by the high court, the other was shot down. It certainly looks like, now that we've turned the corner from 2021 to 2022 in the election year, that crime, whether increasing or not, some people say, no, it's just a perception. The numbers are better. Other people say, hey, no, wait a minute. Tell that to somebody who's a victim of crime. Crime is going to line up as a major issue in the coming race for governor, the coming race for the state legislature. And joining us right now is a gentleman who I've spoken to numerous times in the past. He has served in the General Assembly through 2020. He's now a legislative commissioner. We're talking about former State Senate Republican leader Len Fasano of North Haven. Len, it's Paul here. Happy New Year. How are you?
Hey, Paul. Happy New Year. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's been too long, Len. It's been too long. So listen, you and Mr. Stefanowski, who many people believe will be an announced candidate for the governor's race again to run again. You two penned a rather, I would say, interesting, Len, and pointed op-ed that ran in many of the papers around the state, including the Hearst papers. Fasano and Stefanowski opinion, Connecticut is tired of crime. Len, I've had numerous guests on this from both sides of the aisle on over the past year, year and a half. And Len, the narrative seems to be, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, the narrative seems to be, we get these high-profile crimes. They're brought up by some people. You even have the governor and his public safety commissioner saying, well, yeah, we have to tighten the grip on some of these particular juveniles. And Len, there's also a cadre, though, in Hartford that says, well, this is all an overreaction. Look at the numbers. What are your thoughts on this?
Look, my thought is that crime is getting out of control. And my thought is we've sent the wrong message. Just yesterday at the West Farms Mall area, I call it the Nordstrom's Mall.
Yeah.
A group of people walked in the front doors into Macy's after robbing another store down the street with garbage bags and robbed the place. Now, I don't know about you, but I haven't heard of this type of robbery prior to this year ever happening, not only in the country, but at least in Connecticut. So I haven't heard this type of thing. We have a rash of car thefts. And look, it's not going to affect my car was stolen. But you know what? I would get insurance for the car. I'm not all that hurt. But that car is going to be used in our inner cities to commit a drive-by shooting or a drug deal or something that's awful. These car thefts are being done to commit another crime at another level, more in the cities. And if we care about our cities, and we care that people frequent our cities. I work in New Haven. I lived in New Haven most of my young life. I love New Haven. But when I have to now think twice about going to New Haven because of the crime that's on the street, that's not good for New Haven. It's not good for the store owners. It's not good for the restaurants. Because New Haven's got the best food, by the way. But it's not good for any of that stuff if you're afraid to go into the cities. We're hurting the life in our cities. We're hurting the people who live in our cities. They should not have to fear about a stray bullet taking out some innocent person's life because of some gangland violence or drug violence. And when you cut back on the police ability to do their job, when you cut back on where police don't want to join the force, where we're seeing in Waterbury, in New Haven, and in Hartford, the recruitment class going way down, where morale is down, that all hurts the ability of everybody, in particular people in our cities, from enjoying life. And that isn't the state we should have. That isn't the state I've lived in all my life. And we need to get real on it. And arguing that this is not happening is trying to rationalize a bad vote that you made. It's what it is.
Len, hang on. I'll be right back with you. I want to raise more on this. We'll also talk about the issue as far as juveniles is concerned. Former Republican State Senate leader, longtime legislator Len Fasano on the phone with us. First traffic and weather together right here on WICC. Former Republican State Senate leader Len Fasano continues with us for a few more minutes. He, along with Bob Stefanowski, a likely candidate, Mr. Stefanowski, for the governor's race, I think, coming up in the next few weeks. They penned a op-ed, Connecticut is tired of crime. If you missed it, check it out in the Connecticut Post and the other Hearst, Connecticut properties. Len, I have heard and read, and you probably heard and read some of the stuff from the same men and women that you served with across the aisle up to 2020. The illusion, and some of them have come out and used the exact language. Well, Republicans are just trying to scare the suburbs. They see the election coming, and they're trying to instill fear in mostly white suburban communities. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's amazing. They view truth as fear. And I guess for them, truth should be very fearful for them. The problem is that the facts are the facts, Paul. Look, when I was in the legislature, I was in favor of those programs that if someone were to steal a car for a joyride, then, look, we got to work with that child. We got to help that child out and make them understand this is a bad mistake. And you don't penalize that kid for the rest of their life because they made a stupid,
sure,
immature, childish decision. But where you have repeat offenders, where people are being let out and 2 days later they're being rearrested, you have a problem. When you have problems that cars are being stolen to commit higher crimes, you've got a problem. You want to turn your head to ignore the problems? The very communities that you go to for your political strength, that have the majority in the Capitol, are the very communities that are suffering from these policies. You talk to pastors and ministers, and I have.
Me, I have too.
They want to have safe streets. They want to have safe playgrounds. They want to be able to let their kids out, enjoy the neighborhoods, and they should. They shouldn't be afraid of having a stray bullet or being attacked on the street. No one should live like that. And you only get that when people understand there's consequences to your actions. If there are people who have drug dependency and alcoholism, we have programs in our system, and we should beef up those programs to help those people out of those issues, mental health. Absolutely. I'm not talking about those types of individuals. I'm talking about those individuals who don't care about your life or my life. And those are the problems that we're facing, and those are the things that we have to tackle if we are going to strengthen the state and strengthen our cities.
Len, the tipping point on this seems to be dealing with juveniles, repeat offenders, as you say. And right now in front of me, I have a police release from the Waterbury Police Department of something that happened a few days ago involving an accident, stolen vehicle, guns, and this, that, and the other. And part of the release, Len, reads as follows, quote, "It should be noted that the juvenile offender has an extensive arrest history with the Waterbury PD and was recently arrested in connection with two additional stolen motor vehicle incidents," close quote. Len, that's the kind of thing that when people read, they don't want to see charts or graphs or, God bless them, we love them, social workers. They want to know, Len, why is somebody like this still on the street?
I agree with you. This is a lawlessness that cannot exist because it is that behavior is not, there's no consequences for it. So why wouldn't others do it? And that's the wrong message that we're sending. And, you know, look, we've tied the hands of our police officers. There are bad cops out there, just like there's bad lawyers, just like there's bad doctors. There's bad in every profession. And those people who do these things that should be punished, then the full weight of the law needs to come down on them, on the police officer. But by and large, that's not who are protecting our streets. And when we argue we're going to defund them and somehow that's better for society, I'm not sure that that's a reality I could wake up to. And I think what we're seeing are the policies that were passed roughly the last year I left coming into fruition. And that's what we're seeing. They can blame it on COVID. They can blame it on this. They can blame it on that. But they really know the truth. Deep down inside, these policymakers who voted for this know this is a problem. I don't think they know how to deal with it, but I believe they know it's a problem. And they're kind of caught in their web. So I don't know what's going to happen with this session. But I will tell you this. The reality is everyday people know that crime is up. And every community can point to those instances where their friend or someone they know or a store that they frequent has had this issue. And it hasn't happened before. So what's changed? Simple. Policy. The policy that the Democrats put into place has caused a dramatic shift in the safety of the residents of the state of Connecticut. And I've been kind of quiet since I left the legislature, mm-hmm. but this gnaws at me because this is not a state that I grew up in, and this is not a state that I believe in, where we're not going to allow protection of citizens in all of our neighborhoods, rural and suburb, and that should not be the case.
And, you know, Len, Commissioner Rivella said this a couple, 3 weeks ago, maybe it's a month or so. I think you know what I'm talking about. When that young 14-year-old boy was shot and killed, Commissioner Rivella was asked about this. And he said, listen, we're not talking about mass incarceration here, Len, but he did say, and this is to your point about the repeat offenders, Commissioner Rivella and even the governor said, we're not talking about a lot of people. We're talking about maybe 100, 200, 300 repeat offenders, Len, in the entire state that are causing this wave of stuff to continue. And we just have to do more with them. But I'm astounded that that doesn't gain any traction among our lawmakers. I am too.
And it's the way the laws are written that these folks are getting out without serving, you know, less than an hour and a half for processing. Other than that, they're getting out. But now when you see these rash of folks going into a store 15 or 20, like we've seen in California, start happening in Connecticut, it's just kind of scary. I mean, what happened at the West Farms Mall, that's an issue. Anybody could have gotten hurt to go in with all these people and you rob a store. What type of country, what type of state are we?
Yeah.
Who does this and does it with such impunity? And the legislators are saying, yeah, it happened. You know what the fear is, Paul? Let me tell you my biggest fear.
Sure.
My biggest fear is that this is becoming so commonplace that it's not even getting attention. You know, when a young child is inadvertently in a gang, a stray bullet kills them, it's almost like it's acceptance. Yeah, that's the way it is in these in the neighborhoods now because there's so much violence. How could that be?
Len, I have said that for years, Len, and it's duplicitous among so many of us that if one or two kids, Len, God forbid as we speak, one or two kids is leaving. Let me just put it out there, Len. One or two kids is leaving a white elementary school in the suburbs, and they're shot. Well, we duly would be upset with that. But you're right, Len. This happens in certain other areas of our state, areas where people live that are duly expecting a free society. There's hardly a whisper, Len. There's hardly anything said.
It used to be top of the news, and now it's midway through. And crime is kind of like, yeah, I know, another car stolen, big deal. But that cannot be the norm. And if people are upset as I am about it, and it's not a Republican-Democrat thing, it is the right thing in my view. And if you believe that these are principles of basic society that we need to hold on to as our society as we know it, then you need to speak up. Then you need to speak up. We have let our cities down. We really have. We have let our cities down. And we need, I always say, the strength of our state depends upon the strength of our cities.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to get back to thinking about, you know, Jack Kemp was a great in Congress. He was a terrific senator. He had these really good plans. I read a lot of them. And that's the type of stuff we have to talk about to bring vibrancy back to our cities. But it starts with decency. It starts with law and order. It's this whole moral slip that we're all facing. And we need to recognize that, and we need to challenge ourselves to do better, and we need to challenge our folks that we elect to do better and hold them accountable when they don't. And don't let them find some scapegoat to say, well, it was because of this issue, it's because of that issue. No, it's because of your policies.
Len, on that note, I thank you. Good to speak with you again, and I'm sure we'll be talking regularly again in the future. Len Fasano, thanks. Take care. We'll talk.
Well, thank you. Thanks for taking me out of the mothballs.
Always good to hear you, Len. Thanks, my friend. We'll talk. Thanks.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye. We had some earlier news today, fortuitous to have this next gentleman on with us because I have him booked to talk about another subject as well. But our next guest has been with us several times. He's the Assistant General Counsel and the Barbara K. Olson Legal Counsel at the Landmark Legal Foundation. We want to talk a little labor law and a little constitutional law. We welcome back Mike O'Neill to the program. Mike, good to have you back. Happy New Year. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
Very well. First, before we get to the schools issue here, we have the Supreme Court here. I'm kind of not surprised, Mike, what they did, knocking down the mandate against private businesses, but keeping it for healthcare workers. What do you think of that?
Right. I'm not surprised. Listening to the oral arguments last week, I'm not surprised either. I think you saw clearly there were at least five justices who were opposed to the OSHA mandate, and again, that was the broad-based emergency mandate implemented by OSHA or attempted to be implemented by OSHA that demanded that any employer who had over 100 workers had to obligate those workers to be vaccinated or to subject themselves to mandatory testing and mask wearing. And it really was an overbroad regulation. It was the OSHA has no authority to do that. They've traditionally never had the authority to do this. Congress has never conveyed that authority to it, and the Supreme Court recognized that. And you saw in the opinion. And it's actually a really good opinion for kind of reining in these administrative agencies who try to run amok and try to run crazy with their authority. And what the court said specifically in the OSHA decision was that Congress, and actually they on the other side of the penny, they said it too in the CMS case, is that Congress never authorized you to take this major rule, to issue this broad-based rule that has enormous political and economic effects without a specific delegation and authorization from Congress. Conversely, they looked at the statute for the CMS mandate, and they said, well, the statute does provide that authority, so you can do it. So really, it wasn't a surprise, but it is a good win for individual rights. It's a good win for businesses. It's a good win for separation of powers. All of these things that we talk about over and over again in constitutional law, it's good to see the Supreme Court recognizing this and not letting administrative agencies run amok and trample upon our constitutional rights.
And Mike, I know I shouldn't have done this, but me being the glutton for punishment, I did it. I went to the Twitterverse and to social media to see how they were reacting. And I talked about it here on the show. It's like my entire body started to hurt when I'm reading stuff like, well, the Supreme Court wants people to die. Don't they see the medical evidence? And, Mike, I had a very well-respected local constitutional authority on this issue on the show last week who said people have to realize this has nothing to do with medicine.
Right.
It's about government authority.
Exactly. And if you take the time to read through the opinion, it's very clearly written. And they go over and above saying that we are not making medical decisions. And you don't want the Supreme Court making medical decisions. They're making decisions about who decides. Who decides who has the power to issue laws that affect the entire country. We're talking 84 million people here were affected by this. Do you think it should be unnamed, unaccountable bureaucrats in a little known, small, well, relatively speaking, administrative agency, or should it be Congress, the body of the legislative body that is directly accountable to the American people? And we know Congress can act when they need to act. They act after 9/11, but they issued the Patriot Act. They have issued multiple pieces of legislation responding to COVID. Congress can act when it wants to, and it's had 2 years to act regarding vaccine mandates. And because it hasn't acted, these administrative agencies like OSHA do not have authority to dictate terms.
And Mike, to get to the issue in the couple of minutes we have left that I booked you on originally, we are seeing here.
I'm going to talk about OSHA, though.
The reluctance by some of these large teachers' unions around the country to basically not pay attention to or to outwardly disobey their municipalities, where the municipalities are saying, hey, we got to get back to in-person schooling here because of kids with COVID. And I'm wondering about that, Mike, and you wrote a couple of interesting things on this, raising some interesting questions. And, of course, the big example we have, Mike, is the Chicago Teachers Union, the CTU.
Right. Yes, and let's be clear. They have backed off that in the past week. They've backed off that in the face of widespread public outcry, and that's a good thing. What you want to see is public outcry. You don't want to see these teacher unions, particularly inner cities, exercising their political power unchecked. And what happens is oftentimes they're the only voice screaming out there at school boards or school systems. In suburbs, you have parents who've organized and who are in a better position, who have maybe have more resources, maybe better organized to oppose these pushes by teachers unions to return to virtual schooling. We know virtual schooling has had enormously detrimental effects on our children. We know we've seen increased anxiety, suicide, depression, not to mention how far back all our students have fallen in their academic journeys. But what you're seeing is teachers unions trying to exert their political power. And when they are the only voice screaming and yelling and parents aren't exercising their First Amendment constitutional rights, they will get their way. So it's imperative that parents stand strong, oppose teachers unions, oppose these efforts to return to virtual schooling. And I think any reasonable person, I mean, there really is no room for disagreement. Students belong in the classroom. Ideally, they belong in the classroom without all of these ridiculous restrictions, masks, social separation. We know that children are strong against COVID, have natural immunities, recover quickly from COVID, recover quickly from the Omicron variant of COVID. They need to be in schools, and any efforts by teachers unions or school systems to return to virtual schooling should be opposed vehemently.
It really was, finally, Mike, it really was fascinating for about a week to see the mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot, hardly a conservative, say, get back in the classroom, and her rather large and influential teachers union say, no, we're not. I mean, you talk about popcorn time. Man, I was watching that going, what is this?
Absolutely. But you see how far the unions are willing to go to effectuate their political agenda. They're willing to go. I mean, I think the numbers, the public outcry and the numbers supporting return to school or maintaining school and opposition to virtual schooling are overwhelming. And yet you see even these unions, again, trying to exercise their political power in the face of all of this. Clearly, they get their way a lot. And this just kind of goes to show the level of arrogance that they approach. But yeah, it was a good thing to see that Chicago stood strong there. Unfortunately, in Clark County, Nevada, there was a 5-day pause. So however you want to say that, you know, we were originally under a 14-day pause back in 2020. We saw how that all worked out. So be leery of these pauses when you see them cropping up across the country.
Attorney Mike O'Neill from the Landmark Legal Foundation. Check him out online, landmarklegal.org. Mike, always good to speak with you. Take care. We'll talk down the road. Thanks.
You too, Paul. Talk to you soon.
Be good. There you go. Check him out, folks, online. Agree, disagree. Let me know. It's landmarklegal.org.